My name is Malavika Prasad, and I'm the host of Your Favorite Book, a podcast all about asking that big question, what's your favorite book and why? I have no real credentials, I just really like books, and yada yada yada. Today we are here for the Short Story Book Club episode. It is the end of another month, and I'm so excited to have you join me for this deep dive into a short story, or in this case, an essay. My guest is Jasmine Vias, who you might remember from our episode on What We Carry, and Jasmine has chosen an absolutely hilarious essay by Samantha Irby for us to talk about. And let's be honest, this is a little light on the critical commentary and more about just a lot of laughing and a lot of reminiscing about how deeply difficult it is to try to make friends as an adult. So hopefully you enjoy our wonderful little rambles, and let's dive in. Welcome to Your Favorite Book. All right. So Jasmine, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you back with us today.
Thank you so much for having me back. I love your podcast, and it's always really fun to have a conversation with you.
It really is. And for those of you who might be new to the show, Jasmine was on our show a few months ago to talk about What We Carry by Maya Lang, a memoir that really hit me like a punch in the gut. I was not expecting so much of what that memoir had to offer. And honestly, I'm glad we're taking things in a bit of a lighter direction with this one, because I think we needed it.
Absolutely. I mean, this is an author, Samantha Irby, who I just love. I adore her work. And I'm really excited that I get to talk about it with somebody who, you know, based on our conversations, you love her just as much.
Yeah, I know. I'm really excited to talk about this. But before we jump into this particular essay by Samantha Irby, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and about who you are as a reader?
Sure. By day, I am an attorney and privacy professional. And by night and evening and, you know, little bits of time here and there, I'm a big reader. I'm a mom as well. And I read all kinds of things, a lot of memoir and then historical fiction, just trying to think, essay collections, short stories, graphic novels. I've been dabbling in YA lately, which has been fun. So just a very eclectic reader.
You are one of the more eclectic readers I know of through, you know, the wonderful world of Bookstagram and through our correspondence. You read really broadly. You read across age groups, you read all different kinds of cultural backgrounds. And I think this one, you know, this is pretty new for our show. So I'm glad I'm talking to such an eclectic reader about it, because it's the first time for the Short Story Club that we've not really talked about a short story. We're talking about an essay. And that's who we don't really get a chance to delve too much into humor much on this show. I think when you hear the words your favorite book, you know, you tend to think of darker, deeper stuff, but like writing humor is really, really hard to do. It's such a talent.
Absolutely. And I often am drawn to like the more complicated, harder stuff. I don't know what it is, but I like literary fiction, and that tends to go towards, you know, the darker side. And memoir, of course, in my opinion, a good memoir gets ugly. And if you're just going to stay at surface level, to me, that is not the type of memoir that I find worth reading. And so like the light, fluffy celebrity memoirs, I just don't like them. And so a lot of my reading does end up being sort of heavy. And then I get to times where I'm like, oh, gosh, I just want to read something lighthearted. But then the characters aren't well developed enough, or it's just not like, oh, it's too fluffy. And Samantha Irby just hits a spot where she just laugh out loud funny. But then her writing just digs deeper to reveal some truth that that the reader may have previously felt like they were alone in that truth. Mm-hmm. And what Samantha Irby shows you is that, hey, you know, there's someone out there who's just as weird as you, or who's just as insecure as you, or in a way that just feels very warm and funny.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And this essay definitely shows us that right at the forefront. It's, to me, one of the most relatable topics out there, but one we don't see written about enough. All right, so let's jump right in. So we are talking about, as we've been alluding to, we're talking about an essay by Samantha Irby. We are talking about specifically the essay, The Worst Friend Date I Ever Had, which is an essay from her collection, Wow, No Thank You. And it's really funny that you picked this one out for us to talk about, because I read Wow, No Thank You maybe a little over a year ago, and somehow this essay just didn't have an impact on me when I read it. So I had even completely forgotten that I had read this, and then it slowly came back. I don't know, that whole collection all read together kind of at once. I felt like it was hard to parse out the individual essays. I remember there was this really great one about competitive Scrabble that I really liked, but that's just because I'm a big nerd. But I really liked getting to just kind of read it in like a micro version, because I really got to appreciate this one for what it was and not letting it blend with all the other essays.
I can be, first of all, I'm gonna have to check out that competitive Scrabble article, I mean essay, because like you, I read this a while ago and I don't remember all of the essays, and I just kind of remember really liking it and thinking it was funny, but and thinking it was, not just funny, but like touched on something deep inside me and inside humans generally. And that's what I really like about her writing. She is like, can be so petty and so kind of stream of consciousness, but like she gets at these really deep truths. And I just love that about her writing.
She does. And the whole thesis of this essay is mentioned right in that first sentence where it says, "You don't have to cry for me, but listen, trying to make new friends as an adult is the hardest thing I've ever done." And I'm just like, 100% absolutely true. Like, it is so hard to make friends as a post-college adult. I feel like we're all spoiled if you went to college, went to college on a campus. I think you're spoiled by just that, enclosed space where there's time and proximity and clubs and like ways to socialize that are just there at your feet. And then you're thrown out into the adult world and you're like, how do I talk to someone in a meaningful way that isn't at trying to get out of a romantic relationship, which he even talks about? It's a conundrum. I have not solved it. Have you solved it?
I sort of have only, but it's only because of my life circumstances. I feel like when you have kids, if you do have kids, and I know not everyone does, Samantha Irby talks about how she is a stepmom, but she doesn't have her own kids and she's not really involved in the school world. But for me, being involved in my kids, their friends' parents and sort of like school community and stuff like that, that really helped. And running and playing soccer has helped. But all those things I came to after I became a parent. And so there was this very lonely time, like you're saying, right after college, when you're sort of, okay, you're for the first time in the full-time working world for many people. And I just never like wanted to be very close friends with coworkers. I mean, I had some wonderful coworkers and I like being around them, but I just feel like there's got to be like a boundary between, your work life and like sort of the very open and vulnerable relationships that I wanted to have as part of my friendships. And so I just felt, yes, I felt very lonely. And I remember thinking this exact thing, like, there's all these resources about dating and how to meet someone, and it's very normal to go on a blind date or have someone set you up, but there's nothing really like that for friendships. And so you're kind of like floundering, not only because there's no resources, but there's also not really a way to talk about this situation, this experience of like meeting someone, thinking, okay, we might have something in common, and then wanting to deepen the relationship, but also feeling super awkward and not really having the tools to know how to make that happen. And like you're saying, when you're in college or when you're in school, quite often you've got that built-in thing of, you live close to each other, you've got classes together, you've got some reason to be around each other. And then it's sort of natural to say, oh, hey, let's go to lunch or let's hang out and do this or that. And at some point in adulthood, that stops. And so, yes, it's a very difficult place to be in.
Yeah, and it really hits you in the gut, because what people don't expect, they act like finding a romantic relationship is one of the hardest things you're ever going to do. And for many cases, it is. And so there's a lot of guidance for it. Like we've talked about, there's a lot of apps, there's a lot of how-tos, there's a lot of advice people give, but
people sort of treat making friends as a given. You know, it's like you've been making friends since you were like 2 years old in daycare. You know, everyone knows how to make a friend, but that's just something we take for granted. You know, making friends is not that easy, and it changes a lot the older you get, because, you know, when you're 2 years old, you know, you can just kind of run around, and she alludes to this when she talks about watching the kids at Halloween, and they're all just kind of interacting with each other without any kind of anxieties or any kind of judgment. And you envy that. But as an adult, that's going to change for you. You see Samantha Irby going into all of these pros and cons when she interacts with people that might be potential friends. And it's like, at some point of it, you're like, are you judging these people harshly? But also you're like, oh yeah, I judge like that too. Like it really calls you out.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what I really like about her writing, is that like, she'll say things that that I think a lot of people feel but don't really want to admit to themselves. And so when you see it there in writing, you're sort of like, gosh, yes, she is petty, but I have been that person too. You know, maybe not out loud, but in my head. I will say, like, so she's talking about in part of the essay how kids seem to be very natural and very have these easy interactions. But when I think back to myself as a kid, and even I've read her work and her as a kid, like, there are a lot of awkward and lonely kids out there. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's just a feeling of like the grass is greener sometimes, like, oh, it's easy for kids to make friends. But I think there's a lot of kids out there who also feel like it's hard to make friends.
Yes.
And this is something that I've talked to my kids about, like, things like social skills we might think are innate, but they actually are skills. And sometimes mm-hmm. there's people who don't have the skill, and in just like reading or writing or doing math, you know, there are tools and things that you can learn, you know, to build the skill of making friendships. Now, that doesn't make it easier per se, but it, at least it's like, it's something, right? It's a tool that you could use. So you're not just floundering out there on your own, you know, not knowing what to do.
Absolutely. You know, I can't believe I missed that, because I was such an awkward, lonely, socially stunted kind of kid. Like, I had my friends, but most of the time I was kind of alone with my books. Like, that's just what was comfortable for me. And, you know, socializing was just hard. And to date, it is still hard. And it's hard to find people that you feel comfortable with. And I think what Samantha Irby really shows us, the whole way she structures this essay, to obviously there's no real spoilers in this essay, although there's a fun little thing at the end. But if you're listening to this episode, you've read this essay, I'm assuming. So essentially, we start with Samantha Irby talking about her struggles making friends and sort of how she goes about identifying potential friends in social situations. So we see that she encounters this woman who seems really interesting, but there are some drawbacks. You know, she's got a husband and children, which is very different from Samantha Irby's life with her partner and no biological children, anything like that. You know, that's a difference. And she's, you know, parsing out, you know, is it worth becoming a friend with this person? And it goes on from there. And then it shows us her actual friend date and, you know, all the calamities that go. So it goes from this very general thing to this very specific, and you really get into Samantha Irby's little, her personality traits, you know, the desirable and the undesirable. You really get to know her here. You know, you were talking before that memoirs have to kind of dig deep for you. And even though Samantha Irby delights in humor and writes a lot of humor, her humor digs deep. It doesn't stay at the surface level.
Yes, absolutely. And I guess so. One of the things that that I found very relatable about this essay is that it went from like very surface level things, like how she would judge people who, you know, if they had colorful hair, if they had tattoos, she thought, okay, I might have something in common with this person. And then she goes to herself and like just her deepest, darkest kind of like insecurities about herself. And I like how she goes in between them, and her writing style is stream of consciousness, which, see, you know, at first glance might seem like it's an easy writing style, like just write what you think, but it's clearly like she's edited this a great deal and made it really funny and had some excellent pacing and stuff. And so it really, like, I feel like that's what is the magic about her writing, is that she'll be very surface level and petty, and then all of a sudden she'll go deep. And it's like,
yeah,
yes, yeah, I feel seen right now. I feel like I'm not lonely. And, you know, to your point about being a kid who spent a lot of time alone with books, I mean, I was like that too. And I was bullied pretty badly as a kid. And, you know, so books were always, for one thing, a refuge for me, but I always had this like sort of inner voice or thought process that I always thought was so weird about myself. And now that I'm older, I recognize that was the writer in me, you know, that that observational ability, that like the kind of ways that I was thinking and stuff, I can now see form, you know, my writerly voice. And I think that for a lot of writers, it is that way, where like they're just very observant, and they're sort of in themselves, sometimes stepped back from situations, but always like with this keen eye. And that's what I see in Samantha Irby. And I didn't notice what you said about the structure. But yes, that's true, that it goes from like a broad, like, hey, here's this situation that everyone has been in or might relate to. And then she drills down into like the specifics of like what she's done to resolve it, to make a friend.
You're right. You know, books are this refuge. I, for one, like, books sometimes to me would feel almost unrealistic, because like everyone in the book has this group of friends that they pal along with. And like you see it in movies, and you're like, some people idealize like that ideal Prince Charming. And I was always idealizing the group of girlfriends that always seem to hang out with each other. And I'm like, how do you even find this group? And there's two things that Samantha Irby wrote in here that like completely called me out personally. And so the first thing is that she notes that a few years ago, she moved from Chicago, the city of Chicago, to Kalamazoo, and talks about sort of, you know, the benefits of that move. You know, things are really cheap. I can still travel to nice cities and eat good food, but I come back and pay little for gas and things like that. And, but at the same time, it's so isolating. And I'm like, 3 years ago, I moved from New York City to the suburbs of Chicago, which was like 6 months before the pandemic started. And it has been incredibly isolating, because the suburbs of Chicago are not Chicago. For anyone from the suburbs, you know that. And then it's just, you're gone. You're going from New York City, which is very walkable, full of people. There's, you know, anybody who's interested in anything is out there. And then you come to the suburbs and it feels like this monoculture. And if you don't fit in, like, how do you meet people? Especially if you're, you know, you don't have kids, or maybe you're past partying stage or whatever. Like, if you're just not in the little groups that exist, it's just so hard to find anybody. So yeah, totally felt called out by that. Thanks, Samantha. The second thing is, she mentions just the line, is there an app for this? Jasmine, have you ever tried a friend-making app before?
I have not, but I did notice that I think it's Bumble has a friend app.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I've never tried it, but I think it's worth a shot.
As someone who has tried Bumble, and this, I have to preface this by saying, I mean, those of you that have listened to the show, I've mentioned my husband a fair bit. I met my husband day one of college. I had never been on a dating app. And so I just didn't know what it was like to swipe through people and make snap judgments just based on a picture and a few words. And I was like, oh, this feels mean. I'm not going to like this. And it did feel kind of mean and disconnected. And I'm like, no, I should really read everybody's profile and not judge so harshly. But the longer I spent on that app, the more I was judging the crap out of everybody. I'm just like, looking at this, and like, there were like certain words that would throw me off. And I'm making, as soon as I, someone refer to themselves as hashtag boy mom or hashtag girl mom, like, no offense to any of my friends who have kids, I immediately swiped left. I'm like, I have nothing in common with you. And then very ironically, we're recording this on 420. All the people would be like, want to smoke, I'd be like, no, because I hate how it smells and I'll never be able to get that smell out of my couch. So I would be swiping left on those people too. And I'm just like, at the end, I'm like, Malavika, you're just looking for somebody who will read books with you and like sit in silence and drink coffee. And like, maybe that's not what the world is full of. Maybe you need to find people that are different and like learn to talk to other people. But Yeah, I think
it's a good thing that you have a podcast. Because that's exactly what you're doing now. So you kind of made your own community that way.
I really did. And I know I'm calling myself up big here, but we all judge. We do these like snap little judgments. And Samantha Irby basically made me feel like, you know, I wasn't even judging as much as she was. She was finding the littlest things to judge about. But at the same time, I couldn't hate her for it because I'm like, yeah, I see it. You just get so used to that mentality. It doesn't get away from you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it also makes me think about like what you said with people describing themselves. We kind of do this with our clothes or like accessories or, you know, what books we carry around or whatever. Like these things can be ways of connecting and conversation pieces. And then I think about little kids and how they wear, you know, like my son went through a phase where he only wanted to wear character clothes. And it was like, there's so much of self-expression that comes out of, you know, how we dress. And now in the world of apps, you know, how we describe ourselves and like how that, how we build our identity in those ways. But at the same time, it can lend this, you know, this layer of, I guess, easy judgment or a feeling that there's just like unlimited people out there and you can just swipe left or what, I don't know what, if it's left or right, but you can just swipe on people and there is like this unlimited number of options and you can wait until you, you know, find the exact right one. And that was something from Modern Love, Aziz Ansari's book that he talked about with like with dating apps, how there's just like this such a plethora of options that it makes you feel like you can just, you know, kind of custom build a person and, you know, obviously you can't. And so same thing with friends. I think that there's a lot of times where there's people, you know, who can be off-putting at first or something that they said was made you think that, you know, you don't have a lot in common. And then sometimes it's just like through the magic of time, it's almost like you have to simmer, like you have to simmer together to kind of like get to a point where you realize what you do have in common or that, you know, maybe something about somebody irritates you, but like you're willing to overlook it because of the good is that's there within them. And then the same thing with us, like, you know, I mean, there's certainly tons of things about me that I'm sure my loved ones or friends dislike. And they saw past it. But when you're at that beginning stage of like, okay, there is an acquaintance, I think we have something in common. And then it can be scary to take that leap into the world of, okay, what, you know, what else about them? Like, how can I get to know them better? And that like fear of like, will I like what I see? Will I not like what I see? And so you have to take that risk.
Yeah. And I think one thing that's sort of under the surface in this essay, along with, you know, the two of us as, you know, women of color who can speak to this, is like making friends, especially if you're a minority in a white majority area, it feels like a bit of a minefield sometimes, especially like if you live in a more conservative area. Sometimes you'll just be having a nice conversation with someone and then they'll say a political thing and you're like, okay, how do I get out of this situation? And we see Samantha Irby in her caution when she's interacting with people. I mean, there's probably some of that to it. You know, we see her mostly interacting with white ladies in this particular essay here. And there has to be an element of that, of, you know, just trying to get a feel for where this person stands. You know, are these political views that you can vibe with? Because, you know, as opposed to like hashtag boy mom or anything like that, you know, that's something that's really important and really real. And maybe sometimes you don't want to try to reach across the aisle because sometimes someone's political views just mean that they stand for certain human rights. And that's a reasonable deal breaker. So there's an element of that too, that you have to navigate.
That's very true. And it's weird because it's a topic that might not come up right away. And then you feel like, well, I might've invested, you know, all this time in getting to know a person. And then all of a sudden they said something that, you know, they have some kind of belief that I just feel like I can't accept or that I can't be close to. And then, you know, there's that fear of like, okay, I've made myself vulnerable. And now I don't know, like have to somehow backpedal out of this awkward relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. I have friends who are on dating apps, and they're like, you can be really forthright about your political views on certain dating apps and be like, don't swipe right if you voted for Trump or whatever. But like, it's harder to do that with friendships, especially if you're trying to start something organically. And, you know, you make a conversation with that nice person at that one thing you went to, and, you know, or if you have to keep interacting with them, you know, if you go to the same gym or you're at the same workplace or you go to the same pottery class or what have you, like there's an element of, you know, you can't just completely ghost someone and move on if you keep seeing them in places.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. I guess we've been talking a lot about sort of the broad topic that this essay is about and doing a little less of the sort of digging into the actual essay, which is fair. I mean, this isn't exactly, you know, your highbrow literary, let's analyze all the symbols here. But one thing I wanted to point out is, you know, once we get to the actual friend date that Samantha goes on, and then we get to, you know, the quote unquote, the worst friend date she's ever had, to me, like, she embarrasses herself briefly, but it doesn't sound all that bad. Like, I'm like, is this the most awkward situation you've ever been in? Because it feels like everything you were writing about for was building to something way bigger than this turned out to be.
I did feel like it was awkward. If I were in her shoes, you know what I mean? Like,
fair.
Sometimes you judge yourself so harshly for like some throwaway comment that you made or some, you know, mistake that you made or something. And then someone else looking at you or hearing about the situation might be like, oh, that wasn't such a big deal, you know? And I think that's part of kind of this, the difficulty of these friend dates or like building friend relationships is that you might have to go through something that you feel is just so embarrassing and humiliating. Like when she was, she thought that she was recognized as a writer and actually the person was just recognizing that she was from Chicago because she had a Chicago credit card. you know, like to her, she might have been like, I feel like I've been that person who's been so hard on myself for something that someone else would think like, oh, that's silly. Like I didn't even remember it the next day sort of thing, you know?
That's a good point because I am putting myself in that situation and I'm like, yeah, I'd probably be embarrassed as fuck. Like that's really embarrassing. Cause
like, do you recognize me from my podcast? Do you recognize my voice?
It's funny because I'm laughing because I have that same Chicago Skyline debit card. Like, as I'm from the Chicago, I looked at my debit card and I'm like, oh yeah, like I have this card. And I'm like, now I know not to avoid that. I'm wondering if my reaction to not being so overwhelmed by the moment reading it is because everything is written in this sort of like heightened sense of anxiety. So there wasn't like any escalation really, maybe from a like a writing standpoint, maybe like more of an escalation would have really emphasized this. Although she writes the moment beautifully, like the line here where it's like, of course, this cool young person with pink hair and hand tattoos wasn't familiar with the self-indulgent ramblings of a middle-aged depressed lady with chronic diarrhea. And I'm like, this is basically my podcast, everybody. Here we go. But you're right. She conveys it so well. And so maybe it was just because everything is written with that level of like frantic anxiety that it was just like hard to parse it out.
Yes. No, I definitely see what you mean where like she leads you to believe that like there's some disaster or like, and it really is, you know, is fine. Like there's a few awkward moments, but it's really not that big a deal. But I do think that's her writing style though. Like everything for her is like, oh my God, I'm just so gross. I'm just, you know, like I'm so embarrassing, but yet I'm like judging everybody else. And like, that's just to me what makes her writing and what I like about it. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I really like about her writing is like, she talks about beauty in this, just very relatable way. Like she says here, I keep a grimy, dusty NARS multipurpose stick in the bottom of my bag just in case I run into someone who knows me and might ask, damn, are you sick? All loud and shit in the middle of the mall. And it's just like, there is something about beauty culture that's like, even if you don't want to make an effort, it's like, it's like the security blanket for a lot of us. Like, oh, I had my lip gloss in the bottom of my bag and I like made myself look a little bit better. And that made me feel better about myself. And like, she really captures how that can work in a lot of people's lives. Like the role of beauty and the role of products kind of in identity building.
Yeah, it's wanting to make that first impression. And I just loved the detail, the attention to detail she has in her writing. I mean, that's the biggest compliment I can give. There's just such a good attention to detail. So those of you that know me, I'm a big Jeff Perlman fan. Jeff Perlman, sports writer. He's been on the show before. Read his books if you like sports. But Jeff Perlman has a podcast. And one thing he always talks, it's a writing and journalism podcast. And one thing he always talks about is like, when you're writing an article, don't tell me he drove a car. Tell me what kind of car he drove. Don't tell me he ate breakfast. Tell me he ate eggs on pumpernickel toast. Like, give us those details. Like, that's what we come to long form writing for. And Samantha Irby is so good at picking out the relevant details, the grimy NARS blush stick. Like, we can immediately picture that at the bottom of our purse, like gathering hair and lint. Like, we can picture that. Like, we can picture her oat lattes that she has to pay full price for in this lovely shared office space. Like, we can picture all of these things. And I love that, because this could easily be like a dry think piece about trying to make friends, but she makes it personal, she makes it detailed, and she makes it unmistakably hers.
Yeah. And it's funny because that's exactly the kind of thing that I think a lot of writers, I mean, I guess I can speak for myself. When I was a kid, that was the kind of thing that I thought was so weird about me. Like, I had this great memory and like I was very observant and stuff. But, you know, as I've gotten older and as I've sort of learned more about writing, lately a catchphrase seems to be the more specific, the more universal, or something to that effect, where it's like, mm-hmm. when you get very specific about an experience or about, you know, yourself or whatever story that you're telling, that's what makes it relatable. At least in this case, I find that to be very true. In telling her own story in a stylized Samantha Irby way, that's what makes people able to relate to her.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I've lived a totally different life than Samantha Irby. You know, I live that domestic suburban life with a husband. I'm younger than she is. I work in science. All these differences, you can point out a bunch. You have a bunch of differences from her too. But immediately you can relate to her being like, I don't really like sushi, but I pick sushi because I want it to seem cool. And these little things that you do to try to be accepted by others, it's just like you point out the details, and like just reading those individually and really appreciating this for the close read essay that it is. Like, I feel like I'm her friend now. I feel like I want to be Samantha's friend.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it also makes me think of something else, which is something that I'm passionate about in my reading, which is like trying to seek out stories of marginalized people, which I mean, I don't love that phrase, but I guess I'm trying to seek out like people who haven't been heard as much before. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of gatekeeping in publishing that keeps these stories out of either the bookstores or out of publishing, or if they do get published, like they don't get as much marketing or they don't get as much promotion. And so there's just a lot of gatekeeping, I feel. Mm-hmm. And it's not just me, like, you know, this is well documented in the publishing world, the lack of diversity. And even when we do see diversity, there's like sort of a shunting of stories into like a few different kind of categories. And so I don't know. I wonder like how many more Samantha Irbys are there out there who are just like not being heard, or who just, you know, some editor thinks like, oh, you're not relatable or whatever. And what if we could read those people? And I wonder, you know, like what would we learn about ourselves, or what would we learn about the author if we had access to those things or those writers?
Absolutely. You know, we were looking, there's always this talk all the time about how works by BIPOC writers don't necessarily need to be about trauma to be read, and nor should they be. And like, this is, you know, a little bit of a trauma of having an embarrassing moment, but not the like big capital T trauma that you typically think of with, you know, literary fiction. You know, there's no crimes against the human condition here. It is an individual moment with an individual character. Her identity is still part of the story because it dictates how she navigates through the world. But it's not about racism necessarily on the surface. That's not the main point of it. It's not about being oppressed on as its main topic. You know, these are not what we come to. This is not what we should be looking for in all of our stories. We should just be looking to read the experiences of different people, get to know their stories, and promote them when they're really, really good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I feel like I appreciate Samantha Irby a lot more now closely reading this essay than I did kind of breezing through the collection. So I would advise to all of you, you know, definitely do pick up Samantha Irby's work. Maybe if you're more like me and humorous essays tend to run together, read them slowly, read them kind of one at a time, come to them when you want to. I definitely recommend the Scrabble one. I really liked the Scrabble one. But her work is really, really good. She's got like 4 essay collections or something like that. Like, she has so much out there. But yeah, definitely read more of her work if you like this style.
Yes, agree. And I'm going to check out that Scrabble essay. And I will say, so I am thinking of 3 of her books. One is this one, Wow, No Thank You, which I loved. Another one is We Are Never Meeting in Real Life, which I loved. And then there was Meaty, which I was kind of okay on. I didn't love it. I would say for this style, it's Wow, No Thank You and We Are Never Meeting in Real Life are the 2 that I would recommend.
Yeah. Yeah. I've only read Wow, No Thank You. I haven't read the others. But yeah, definitely check out more of her work. And yeah, I think we all just need to be looking for a little more humor. I love a good essay. Jasmine, I'm really glad you picked this one because I was in the mood for something lighter. And this definitely hit the spot for me.
Yeah. And it was fun discussing and, you know, like the whole friend thing. Like, I remember how lonely it was, you know, in that period right after college and like trying to kind of like figure out your group and stuff. And it was nice hearing about your experience and like Bumble. I have not talked to anyone who has used Bumble for friendship. And that was really interesting to learn about.
I've tried, and I
applaud things. You for like, for taking the risk of, you know, doing something different and that required you to kind of put yourself out there.
Okay. Before we close out, I have to give everybody the skinny on the various ways to find friends that I've tried and sort of the pros and cons of them. So I'm going to give you a very short summary of the things I've done. First thing, Meetup. Meetup is great. If you have Meetup groups in your area, Meetup is really great. But caveat, Meetup's really only great if you live in a city. So I met my writing group on Meetup back in New York. We're still friends 4.5 years later. So that's awesome. But I moved to the suburbs. There were no Meetups. I tried to start one, did not happen. Meetup is location dependent. Bumble definitely has its pros and cons. You're more likely to meet individuals, but you may get really caught up in that swiping mentality. Facebook groups, yeah, your mileage may vary. I'm not a big fan of the Facebook groups. You get a lot of weird political talking points there. But the worst one by far is Nextdoor. Everybody, if you are under the age of maybe 65, avoid Nextdoor because all it is people talking about, I saw a car drive by my house and I'm calling the police. I saw a suspicious flyer. I am calling the police. And I am just like, my Amazon package is missing. And I'm just like, okay, how does anybody, maybe this is suburb dependent, but those are my experiences trying to make friends. The one success I've had since moving to the suburbs, I recently took a pottery class. Pottery has been awesome. So you were mentioning soccer. I'm going to mention pottery. Find a new hobby and try that. You're likely going to meet like-minded people.
Yes, that is great advice and just like very funny. I feel like you could write your own essay about, you know, all your foibles of, you know, the trial and error of trying to make friends. As an adult.
Shout out to the actual friends I've made on Bumble. You know who you are. You're great. But why is this so hard? That's what I'm going to leave everybody with. Why is it so hard to meet people?
It is very hard to meet people. You know, your thing reminded me of one story, which was when I, after I got married, I moved from LA, where I was born and raised, to Cleveland, Ohio, where my husband was. And I did a lot of these things. The meetups and stuff, I think I did one meetup, but I vividly remember joining a knitting class, and the women were lovely, but they were all like grandmothers and over 65. And I was like in this garage of this grandmother's house, and she was teaching us all how to knit. But so we could relate on some levels, but we could not relate on every level. So making Absolutely. Friends is not for the faint of heart. But you know, when you persist, I think it's worth it.
Yes. And when in doubt, everybody, just start a podcast. You'll meet some really great people this way.
Thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, please let me know about it. Feel free to rate and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, wherever you listen to shows. There's usually a way to give us 5 stars. If you like the show, we have weekly episodes every Thursday. We'll be back to our regular interview episodes the week after next. No episode next week, just taking a little bit of a break, but we'll be back the second week of May with all new episodes and all new guests. Feel free to follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter. We are at YFB Podcast for reviews and other content and random ramblings like this. And until then, have fun and happy reading.